My name is Nakia Fields, and I'm the executive director of Therapeutic Play Foundation.
What inspired you to create the foundation?
I am a woman living out here in this world, and as a mental health professional, my focus initially, I think, was on children and families and working in schools. And while I was exposed as a licensed clinical social worker, based in school settings, I just saw a lot of children and families that needed help. And they needed help that came with an approach that didn't feel punitive or judgmental or scary because it needed a fun, playful approach, you know. And as a registered play therapist, I found that I was able to bridge the gap in educating people about taking care of themselves and educating children about what emotions are, how to express those emotions, how to communicate with adults and adults communicate with children, and then like the whole family communicating. So I just really felt called as a professional to help implement something different than what I was being exposed to in my career, both in like a mental health organizational setting and in a school setting.
Yeah, can you tell me a little bit about your own mental health journey?
I'm human. And as I mentioned, some of my identifiers are that I'm a woman, I'm a mother, I'm a Black woman, I'm an entrepreneur. So all those identifiers come with their own sorts of stress. And I think that throughout my life, I think I've been a highly anxious person my whole life. My mom was a single mom. And I was the oldest. And if I needed anything extra that wasn't already provided by the school or available somewhere from some other cousin or somebody I could borrow it from, then I wasn't gonna have it unless I like hustled for it. So I think that developed in me like this sort of anxiety. Also living in certain communities growing up as a young girl, walking to school. The people I encountered, the energies I encountered in certain neighborhoods. I think even when I was growing up, I like was in a drive-by shooting. Like I was just sitting outside and there it was. So I have found myself just sort of inherently anxious in my body. And as a kid, it manifested in me talking very fast and also sort of being avoidant of people. I was like, I'll just go read a book. I was really interested in reading. And I would say that I got to know anxiety very well, even more so when I became pregnant. And I had a child and had quite a stressful birth. And then after having my child, I had some custody issues with his dad, but now we've resolved it and gotten to a co-parenting place. But I would say I felt a lot of postpartum anxiety as well. So I would say my whole life I've suffered with anxiety, and I think I entered into a career as a mental health practitioner because I wanted to first soothe myself and learn how to do better. And then once I really did learn that, and I learned that through yoga, breath work, journaling, meditation, just taking care of me, noticing when I am feeling triggered and anxious because I notice my speech goes faster, right? Or I start to blurt things. So I started to really become aware of who I was and how my anxiety showed up in myself as a professional, as a human, someone in relationship with others. And I really tar started to target it because I wanted to do better for my child. So that's where I am now. I sort of created the nonprofit because I had just given birth to my baby and I was looking for community and other people to engage with. Around programming where I could bring my child to it, where my child could be incorporated in it, and I could still be a professional. So it gave me a higher level of intention behind my work with anxiety and trauma. And I moved a lot more into programming for mommies first. The very first program of Therapeutic Play Foundation was Mommy Matters, because I matter, right?
Yes.
So my whole nonprofit journey was about my mental health.
Yeah, and as kids, growing up is a stressful environment. How important is it to have a positive space to a positive outlet to be creative?
Yeah. You know, and I'm a creative person, so I think other people had no choice but to give me the outlet that I needed to be creative. I've always been sort of like innovative also in my creation, and I think I, as I described, when I wanted something, I sort of had to figure out a way to get what I wanted, and that, you know, turned me into the entrepreneur that I am. You know, I was always able to like, okay, let's put together some food and sell it to, you know, to get my little sister to go on a trip she needed to go in. When she was in elementary school, I just remember always thinking about how I can make things happen. And I think that's creativity. You know, that's artful to like be able to see solutions or outcomes that aren't present yet.
Have you seen the confidence level rise in kids and even families as they go through the program?
Yes, of course. You know, because we believe in something called collective care, which is truly the idea that humans need to be connected to each other to feel well and to be well. And it's coming from a scientific space. You know, we have tribal brains, like we were born with tribal brains. What that means is that when we are connected together and energetic together, we solve problems faster, we build communities faster, we grow food faster, we share it. Somebody grows corn, somebody else does this, and then it's able to have a full meal, right? So that's how, when we did engage in tribal connections in the olden days, we were healthier, because now we're a little bit more able to be separated, especially through the computer. You know, you can live in a silo in your own room or your own home without ever leaving if you can work from home. So what that does for you is it gives you a false sense of reality that you are the only one in the world, or and it also gives you a sense that you are the only one in the world, you know, in a sad way. Like there is nobody who cares for you or connects to you. And I think Therapeutic Play Foundation, really, we do the work of creating safe spaces. We partner with churches, we partner with schools, we partner with other organizations to, if we don't provide a service, we get you to connect to another service. And you know, the smiles and the gratitude on people's faces when they show up in our spaces is like what makes my heart smile. For example, last night we have a group called Black Motherhood and Excellence. Black Excellence in Motherhood. And it's a support group dedicated to Black mothers. And remember my story, how it founded. It was because of me. So this is like sort of our flagship program aim, because a lot of Black women, although they might need support, they tend to not engage in the services or have trust in the service provider. And the fact that we've been able to build a really good cohort of women who come consistently, we had a pottery group, pottery and yoga, and it was for Mother's Day. It was our Mother's Day celebration. So we have these women who are consistently coming to us. We watch their children, we go pick them up, we drop them off, and we provide food. The kids are happy, the kids are getting to know each other every single time. And I think the outcomes, we also do measurement-based care at Therapeutic Play Foundation. So what that means is that every time somebody comes in, we give them a clinical assessment that tracks the baseline of where they started, and then we continue to assess them and set goals, and we can see where they've made progress. And we can see significant decrease in depressive and anxiety symptoms since they started with their baseline to their current treatment with us, of just these mothers. But I can go beyond just these mothers. We have a full programs that serve the whole family unit, the whole person. We accept Medi-Cal. We serve at-promise communities. We have a homelessness focus. So we really do see a difference between somebody suffering and being in crisis and feeling alone coming into our community and finding a tribe. They can come to our Black Mama group. They can go to our yoga groups, our walking groups, our art therapy groups, our kids groups, the ones that are not focused on certain populations. It's all open, and we accept insurance. So we're out here doing the work.
What is it like talking to fellow moms?
I feel relief, you know, because sometimes I feel alone. I am a single mom. I'm co-parenting, but it's my household, and there are rules and things that I have to enforce with the young man. You know, he's 11 now. That for me, it's nice to talk to other moms who might have a very similar experience. Some of the other moms are single moms to a boy that are similar age to mine. So I to get to talk to them about it, you know, this is my first time and I only have one. And I'm trying to do right by him, and I'm trying to give him the tribe that I know his brain needs. So that's why I think I incorporated children getting to come, because my kid's upstairs too. And I'm a part of that Black Mama group, not as a facilitator. I'm just a part of the group and there's somebody else facilitating. And I just love it and I need it. And I think I would be way less regulated in my ability to govern the whole organization as executive director if I didn't have outlets like this.
How are you doing?
Good. I'm so blessed. I stay blessed. You good?
I am good too. I'm excited for what I do. For you, what do you do to help your own mental health?
Well, I think I chose a life. Hold on really quick. I have this dog on here who is biting on the cord. This was her for a moment. So that's one of the things that I love is that I love my dog. You know, I have a 7-month-old golden doodle. Her name is Nova, and she's sitting here and just kind of like being present with me. I love her energy. I love taking her on walks, going on hikes with her. We go to Kennethon Park a lot, and there's an overlook that you can see the whole city of LA, and we kind of just sit there and meditate sometimes. So she's a part of my life. I'm also training her to be a therapy dog. So that we can incorporate groups with her hanging out. So I think another way that I take care of myself is always incorporating things I love into what I do for work. So I am a serial entrepreneur. The Therapeutic Play Foundation is a nonprofit I founded to empower wellness in the community. It's the way I give back, but I also have for-profit organizations that I work as a consultant. I run trainings. I develop programming for other organizations. So for me, I feel freedom in getting to travel. I do wellness retreats. I'm going to Bali next month because I'm hosting a art and wellness retreat in Bali in March. So I think I'm just really focusing on being healthy and happy and making money doing it so that every day while I'm working, I'm really enjoying my life and building a life for me. I love yoga. I go to hot yoga once a week. I get massages and facials. Get my nails done and my hair's did. I hang out with my kid. We go to Disneyland and I love my family. So, you know, I do all the things that serve me.
What have you learned from your kid?
So much. You know, he's so different from me and he's a boy and I'm a girl. You know, that's the main one. I come from a big family of a lot of women. It's a very matriarchal structure. And I remember I mentioned single mom, although, you know, I have a really good relationship with my dad. In my adulthood, the relationship got much stronger. And I think my son taught me to forgive my dad and move into that relationship. So when he was born, I really made an effort to incorporate my dad into my son's life. And that started a lot of healing. And I learned how to start healing because of my son. I learned how to start to seek relationships to build this nonprofit because of my son. And every day, because he's his own little person, he's really into anime and all this gaming and Roblox. And he even knows how to code and build games.
Oh, that's cool.
He's quite smart. And sometimes he comes and he teaches me language. And I was like, what is that? Like, he was like, that's the Riz. You got the Riz, mom. I was like, what's the Riz? Apparently it's charisma. I was like, yeah, I got the Riz. But anyway, I love it. It's been fun to relearn the world through him. And next month when I go to Bali to do a site visit for the wellness retreat, he's going with me. And we're going to stop in Tokyo on a layover so we can go to Tokyo Disney. So he's my Disneyland partner. We go to Disneyland like once a month. Since he was a little kid, it was like a play date because you can get an annual pass here in Southern California. Because he loves Tokyo and anime and that culture so much, because Tokyo was a part of my layover, I'm able to bring him so that he can have that experience. So I'm really excited to see it with him.
Everyone says that's the best one. So
I heard, and you know, they're opening a new land in June. Like, I think it's Fantasy Springs, and we are going the exact same. The month it opens, we have a pass to go in and everything. So I'm excited.
That's awesome. Yeah. I'm jealous.
Yes. Try. It's coming in June, but it's still going to be there past June, but
yes. For you, have you seen the stigma of just talking about mental health lessening?
No, I think talking openly about mental health has not lessened. The stigma has not lessened. I think that people are now using like buzzwords about it, though. and they're like, I'm engaging in self-care. And like they know about it, they know about mindfulness and they know about wellness. But I think that to really be truthful and express the suffering that you're feeling, the pain, the loneliness, the isolation, the way your body feels horrible, the way you look at yourself and you don't love yourself and you don't like what you see in the mirror, whatever the thoughts and stuff that you say to yourself, people don't really express that truth openly. And when they do think that they can express it, like with a therapist or somebody like that, they almost are going there to express it to be healed in that moment by the therapist. But that's not the work. The work is the internal work. And I think the more that you're able to tell your story and be heard, the more you can heal. And I think if more people talked about what they were experiencing openly and shared their story, they would find more commonalities in people and realize how not alone they are. And that would improve healing. But I think that the outcomes, the healthcare outcomes, like for example, Black women, let's talk about my population of focus, Black birth equity and early childhood. So we have all these really disparities in birth outcomes for Black women and children. We have more Black women dying in birth and directly in the first year after giving birth, and more children under one dying. And it's not because of socioeconomic issues or lack of resources. It's literally the ethnic. That's the only thing different. And a lot of us are saying, according to the data, that that's related to racism. And racism is something that just exists. It's nobody's fault. It's a part of our culture inherently worldwide, not only in America. And there was a thing called colonialism, and it was related to skin color and things like that. So when you know our history, there's Nova, she's saying hi. When you know our history and we know our present, they have to be connected because it is connected. You know, we're all connected to our history and to our present. And when we think about this current population I'm talking about, we are impacted and we were not able to speak our truth. And even when we speak our truth in spaces, we're disregarded because we're not supposed to bring up history. So it's this really vicious cycle of mental illness that's perpetuated by the lack of opportunity to truly speak the truth and then have a resolution after your truth is spoken, like feeling like it's closed for you. Like I've spoken it, it's released, as opposed to I've spoken it and somebody told us, nah, it didn't happen for you. So then it stays within you. The trauma stays within you. So I think that's why I really heavily focus on Black mental health, Black children mental health, Black mother health, because if we have people that are perpetually traumatized in their body, they can't release it. They can't tell their story. They don't trust their doctors, and their doctors don't listen to them. And then we have more deaths, then of course you're going to have more people feeling stigma about telling the truth, because why do it anyway? Nobody's going to listen. So I think we're in a cycle, and stigma is still here. I do think there are a lot of people who are trying to do different. And I think healthcare systems have to change to help them learn how.
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, I have bipolar disorder too, and I was diagnosed only 5 years ago, and it took me 2.5 years to say something publicly. So hopefully that does go away a little bit more.
Yeah, starts with us, me and you, right? So
Right.
I'm speaking very openly about my anxiety. It lives with me. It's been with me. It probably came from some of that intergenerational stuff that we talked about. It came from modeling my own mother's anxiety, probably as a teen mother, right? And then for me, I see my son's a little bit anxious. So I'm like, oh, he got that from me. He's learning it. You know, he's learning it from his dad, who also has anxiety. I see it in his dad. You know, I see it in his grandmother, the language that she uses. And we're always trying to change the way we speak, the way we engage with the world in front of the children, so that we can try to model less of that anxiety. Because when we feel anxiety and depression and fear and worry about our environment, we act with our fear response, which is, you know, fighting. We don't want to fight everybody or freeze on them, not react. Appease them, just fawn, just to give them what they want, regardless of how we feel about it, you know? Or sometimes we just run away or we retreat from our own lives, from our own relationships, from everything. And then we've just lived to run and hide and die, you know? And so that's what mental illness is. And the more that we pretend that that's not happening for us living in this fear response, the longer we stay unhappy and unhealthy, and the stigma will stick around because nobody's talking about it.
Yeah.
That's what I want to change. And I think that's really, truly the mission of Therapeutic Play Foundation, to allow that storytelling to happen without it having to be verbal. You know, you can tell your story through play, through art, through poetry, through rap, through hip hop, through, you know, through a theater troupe, you know, you know, play it out, do it out, let it out.
With that, where do you want to see your mission in the next 3 to 5 years?
You know, I feel like we will be where we are supposed to be. We have grown so much in a 2-year period. You know, I founded the Therapeutic Play Foundation, I think in 2015, 2 years after Amari was born. I was seeking that community. I kind of like settled into my body. We did establish custody. I knew what was going on. And, you know, I was like, okay, and I already had a for-profit business I was running. So the nonprofit was truly just my gift back. I was doing free things in the community. And so before about 8 years, it was just me doing free things in the community. I'm the only staff, not doing any work. And then when the pandemic hit, I used it as a platform to do advocacy for the Black community in the wake of George Floyd. We actually started a coalition called the Black Mental Health Task Force. We partnered with the Department of Mental Health to do that. I was voted in as the chair, and I utilized my organization that had already existed as the backbone to be able to get funding. And we have been funded every year, at least $100,000 from DMH to outreach target to the Black community. Then I was able to expand upon that, continue to get funding. And I got contracts with the state of California to do enhanced care management, which is basically taking care of our most under-resourced communities, which tend to be the Black and Brown communities. So we really are able to build medical insurance for all of the services we do, and to wrap around families through all of our partnerships at schools, churches, and other community centers. So I see us just growing to be very much with our fingers in a lot of pies, because we need to be that way in order to make impact. We need to partner and collaborate and do that collective care I talked about. So I think in 3 to 5 years, all of our primary partnerships will be established. The clients that need to see us and want to see us and have insurance will be able to be seen, instead of us having to refer them out or have them not even have a service accessible to them for what they need, right? And then we'll have more tribe, a bigger tribe, you know, of people who are collaborating together to do better for the world, especially in the realm of healthcare.
How can people reach out to you and learn more?
Yeah, you can find me on most of the social media platforms as the Feel Well Coach. That's my personal brand. I, you know, have a book coming out on May 21st called The Manifested Action Planner, and it's intended to help people realize their goals and manifest their healthiest and happiest lives. And it's also intended to be utilized as a treatment planner by therapists with their clients, if they'd like to help their clients manifest health, essentially. And then if there's a candle line, a yoga deck that goes with it. I do sound healing events. But if you're interested in Therapeutic Play Foundation specifically, we're also on social media platforms as Therapeutic Play Foundation. And we are out there doing the work. So come and find us. If you Google Therapeutic Play Foundation or Nakia Fields, I'm sure you'll get somewhere.